All right. This is Shower Thoughts with an Asexual. I think this is episode 4 now. We are talking with my friend Larry. I actually met him from TikTok. I meet a lot of people from TikTok. So that's where most of the interesting people are. But like, I don't really use TikTok anymore like that. So Larry, first off, who are you? And how do I know you? Even though I just mentioned it, whatever.
Hey guys, so I'm Larry. Education. I'm a staff member. I work as an academic advisor. Mm-hmm. I got into the field basically through my own education experience. I was a resident assistant all through college. So 3 years of that, I went to graduate school, worked as a graduate residence director, went to grad school for education, higher education student affairs. And so I was really going towards that staff member type deal. And so I really liked that. And then worked in Res Life for 2 years after that as a residence director, transitioned into admissions at a different school, and now I'm an academic advisor.
When you started with education, just like why, I understand how you got to where you are now, but like, why did you go into education in the first place? That's a better, more pointed question.
Oh, okay. That's a good question. So
what's
for me,
the story behind that, I guess?
The story behind that. All right. So, and it all starts, it goes back to my mom. You know, she didn't get the opportunity to go to college. She actually dropped out of high school to help her mom pay for bills. And so she's always pushed, like, I need you to go to school. I need you to get an education. I need you to do better than what I've done with my life. So she wanted me to kind of go out there, do what I needed to do. And so it started out because I wanted to make her proud. So I was like, you know, I'm going to go to college. I'm going to, like a lot of people in my situation, grew up in the inner city of Chicago. A lot of us weren't really making it out. And so I wanted to actually just show her that, hey, I'm going to make you proud. I'm going to be that son. I'm going to be the person I'm going to be the one to make something of myself. And so went to a state school, actually loved my experience there. Met a lot of different people, but that's kind
what,
of my,
is that a dog?
Yeah, it is.
Is he just like clacky? No, I see him in the back just kind of moseying around. I just wanted to make sure that like you knew that animal was there. Okay, sorry. continue, sorry.
Yeah. And so went to a state school, enjoyed my experience. Again, a lot of individuals where I'm from really didn't make it out. And so I'm actually proud of that fact. Even before college though, my mom, like in high school, she was really pushing me to go to a private school. Although public school would have been cheaper, she really did break the bank sending me to a private school because she wanted me to have that education.
Like a private high school as well? Okay. Because I also went to private school the majority of my life just because like my mom's position put me around the world from time to time just because like her job had us moving around a lot, so we just had like private school in general. So I understand like the benefits, I guess.
I mean, you say benefits and I get what you mean by
advantages. Let me put it that way. Advantages, okay. That I got from being in private school. Let me not say benefits because like benefits include that like they assume that I didn't like pay for them.
Yep, I know exactly. You went there and I know exactly what you mean. Yeah.
All right, so let's get into the main purpose of this whole conversation. I just wanted to start, like, how has COVID affected colleges? Let's start from the top and then go to the bottom, I guess.
I think from the 10,000 foot level, I guess, a lot of colleges were really struggling in terms of how are we going to do this, because you have to look at it from an equity standpoint. Not every student is going to have stable internet connection. Not every student is going to have, you know, a computer like our setup. Not every student will have this. And so when they're thinking, hey, we're going to do remote learning, how do these students get this access? How are these students going to learn that way? Versus, okay, well, we can open up, but then you put everyone at a risk. And so colleges have been in a tough spot, and I've talked to a few individuals, some of which they go to schools, they're actually open back up, and they're like, hey, we're on campus right now. They're trying to socially distance as much as possible. And other schools, like my school, we're all completely 100% remote. So I know schools that are loaning out equipment to students. We really had to adjust on the fly, and that's what's really tough about the situation, because no institution or college is doing it the exact same way.
Yeah.
Very little direction, I feel, was given to these institutions about, okay, how are we going to navigate this problem, and how are we going to serve our students?
I mean, we had Betsy DeVos as the leader of education and when it came to the government. So let's not dwell on the terrorist past. I wanted to know, do you have an idea of how high schools and elementary schools were affected? Because I only have heard it from the parents' perspective. And of course the parents' perspective is, oh, I have work, I can't do this, this is so hard on me. And I'm like, what? You want the education system to take your kids and teach them, but you don't want to pay my mindset is, if you want to better the education system, you have to better it for the people who sacrifice their lives and ultimately their health in order to teach your rotten ass kids. And it's like, come on.
You're right. And I see it from both sides as well, because again, on one hand, it's like, yeah, we are working, we are busy, we have to, take care of, I have to be a parent 100% of the time. I have to work 100% of the time. But at the same time, if you're asking, or if you're risking these teachers to go out and say, hey, we need to teach, you really do need, I feel like teachers and education has been, it's been cut and cut and cut. Mm-hmm. And so it's just like, eventually a lot of these schools are working literally with the bare minimum. And so one hand, again, I see both sides. The other hand, I feel like we do have to adjust to this. There's no way around it. So if you do want your kids in school, if you want these schools open, you gotta give the teachers an incentive to want to be there, right? What they're risking their lives, they're risking their health to be there. You need to pay them more. You need to give them that morale boost
to do that. Yep. Yeah,
that's the thing. So a lot of people, they talk about, oh, if you love your job, you'll never work a day in your life. That's great. That's great. At the same time, you
love, spend so don't much pay the bills.
Right. You spend so much of your time at work. That's what I'm saying. You spend so much of your time at work. If you're not happy for those 8 hours every single day or longer, because I know teachers work crazy hours, you're going to be miserable. And so you're now telling an individual, hey, we cut this education, we cut this funding, we cut this program, we're cutting your budget, but we still want you to come in and you still have to teach these individuals. That's just going to shoot the morale even further.
Okay. What is the difference between teaching and administrative staff?
So when you look at teaching, you see faculty, you think of instructors, adjunct instructors, things like that. These are the individuals who are teaching the students in their classes. This is the academic side of things. And so in a classroom, you're the ones facilitating discussions. You're the ones assigning the projects, the papers, the tests, the quizzes. That's more so the faculty side. They are teaching. The staff side is everything else, I say, outside of the classroom. So you have your residential life staff, you have your admissions, you have your advisors, you have the registrar's office and things like that. So these are the staff are the individuals who work in the departments to help support the faculty, registration deadlines and things like that.
Gotcha. Okay. So just specifically going on that, when it came to COVID, how was, say, one of your teachers' lives affected as opposed to you yourself?
What I will say is there's this whole thing where it's like always the faculty versus staff thing. And that doesn't exist at every college. There are some faculty who was told, hey, you're going to still receive all your pay. I mean, if you're tenured and everything, tenure track, you've made it. So you're going to get your regular pay regardless of what happens in these specific cases that I know of. And they're like, you can teach from here. They give them all the equipment. For us, it was more so, all right, we had positions cut actually because of not, obviously there were other budget issues, but when it came to individuals losing their jobs, losing their positions, they're like, oh, well, the faculty had to cut X number of dollars, but no faculty member actually lost their job. I had coworkers who I do not work with anymore because their position was cut due to this. And so you have it on one hand where the instructors, it seems like the faculty were safer than staff because they're like, okay, well, two or three people can do your position, so we can cut a position. and just give these extra staff members more work. And again, that goes into that whole morale conversation. And so we were pretty much left out. I don't want to say we were left hanging to dry because our school tried. So they gave us Chromebooks when it first started because not every staff member had access to, you know, this crazy technology where we were able to actually work with students in our home.
Crazy, crazy technology being a laptop.
I've met a bunch of, I work at a community college. I work at a community college. And so I've met some individuals who they would not have been able to survive this without having just a Chromebook at first before the college decided to buy us all dual monitors and things like that and give us a computer.
Okay. I mean, again, a laptop is crazy technology, but we're moving past that. So when
you're not gonna let me live that down.
I'm not. I really won't. You said a laptop is crazy technology. It's been around for 20 years now, so I feel like it's a little mundane at this point. But okay.
I work with people who only have their cell phone, though. That's what I was saying.
Oh, you just work with geriatrics. Okay, I got you. I didn't mean to say it that way, but you work with older people.
Yeah, I do. I really do. I work with individuals who, they may have a laptop, but it may not have the capable. Like you, if you have a 20-year-old laptop versus one that was made 2 years ago,
the performance isn't going
to. Yeah, that's what I mean. You're trying to make me explain. Okay.
Yeah, I got to make you explain. Got to make you defend your position. Okay. So next question. What other issues has COVID exposed in the education system that you've noticed and that have been nationally talked about?
Again, it goes to the issue that I just spoke about. Are schools going to stay open? What positions are going to be cut? And the thing with the whole thing about this is a lot of staff members, and I have friends right now who still work in residential life as residence directors. They were told, hey, you guys are going to have to go home because no students are on campus. We can't staff these residence halls because there are no students living on campus at this point in time. And so they didn't.
Yeah.
Schools in a way said, we don't need you anymore. However, they were able to, I guess, work it out to where they had limited, because my friends are still working. There are students in a residence halls now. And so I'm asking her, how are you all navigating this though? You have two students to a room, they're all close together. Depending on the bathroom situation, they all share the bathroom. How is this all working out? And so for her, they're like, hey, it's the social distance. They really only hang with certain groups. To me, I don't know. I don't know how that's possible or feasible. I understand hey, you went to school, you got this job, you want to make sure you're able to, pay your own bills. But on a national level, it's opened the doors about, these students need somewhere to be during the day, whether you're going off to college or your parents are like, hey, we got to be at work all day, I don't know. It's just
depending on the situation. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's made us realize, hey, all these things we take for granted, if something happens like COVID-19, how do we react to this? And so you see nobody really has a clear-cut answer on what to do, whether it's remote education, whether it's in-person education, whether we're going to open residence halls, whether we're not going to open them.
Okay. So how has the previous stimulus bills, both of them, how have they been affecting education? Because I know largely a lot of those went for tax cuts, the first two stimulus bills. But I wanted to know specifically, what went into, the education, is it the industry?
Yeah,
system,
that's a good...
my dumbass. In the education system, let me ask that again. So how have the two previous stimulus bills affected the education industry?
Education system.
Industry is the same,
I know it is, I know.
Capitalism.
I know what you mean, man. I know what you mean. So for me, and this is something personally, I've seen it to where the school was saying, hey, if this doesn't get passed, we may have to cut X number of we may have to cut a percentage of, financial aid for students. We may not be able to offer this specific class for this quarter or these set of classes for this quarter.
Oh, fuck.
We will be furloughed for X number of days, which we were because, you know, before the first one was passed, there was some lag time between there. So we were furloughed.
Trump fuckery, yeah.
Yeah, we were furloughed because they were saying, if we don't get this, we don't know what's going to happen. We've already had this budget situation, and then the impacts of COVID made it worse. So without that, it's like, okay, what do we do? We're going to have to cut more programs. We're going to have to cut more positions. And we're going to have to furlough individuals. And so we were furloughed for, I think it was like every, I still have friends right now who are still furloughed every Friday until I think the summer, just because they're like, hey, we did get the stimulus, but that's going to be like back money for the schools to like, you know, catch up on what they need.
Yeah.
Or budgetary things.
So people are furloughed one day out of the week?
It depends on the school. So we were furloughed. So when we first started, I think it was a period of, it was really weird. Like 5 months, it was like every Friday, you're just going to be furloughed. And that's literally a day without pay. And so because that day without pay, so you look at that every Friday. So, you know, that's 8 hours of money we're missing. And so that's going to make the check shorter. You know, some people may be tight on like the budget. So my school in particular was like, hey, you can sign up for unemployment for like any lost wages. And so it was a whole process to go through that. So it was a way for the school to not pay us because they didn't want to pay us to save money because, you know, the stimulus hadn't gone through. We were already in a budget situation. COVID made it worse. And it was the action to not cut more positions. It was, hey, we do want to save this money. Mm-hmm. What can we do to not cut positions? And that was one of the solutions.
So I actually wanted to know, you work at a community college, so you work at a public school, right? How about the private sector? How has the private sector been affected by like the two previous stimulus bills? If you know, because like, I'm assuming you have friends in that, in industry, whatever, in the system, in the private schooling system.
I used to. A lot of them actually moved to the public school system. Wow. So I'm not 100% sure. But they still, I mean, from my understanding, private schools still receive federal funding. And so I would imagine they might be in a similar situation. It's just that the private schools, rely more, you know, on, you know, the tuition, like the students paying, like things like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think you were talking about like, how has it impacted private schools? And I think I said, I know of some private schools that may receive federal funding. So yeah, I'm not sure how much it really impacted them though, since most of theirs is done through, you know, their student, like pretty much the students pay.
Yeah, private donations and tuitions, yeah.
Things like that. So I don't know how much federal, if any, they really receive.
How will the new stimulus bill passed by Biden affect the education system moving forward?
I mean, I would think it's so, and this is just going to sound, money is money, right?
Money is money.
And so the way I look at it, something is better than nothing. I think that a lot of schools, I mean, the issues that we're having now, no amount of money, I think, is going to fix, you know, what's happened. Like, this is going to be a new normal. Even when this whole COVID thing is over, even when budgets bounce back to what they previously were, we're still going to be in a situation to where it's like, okay, this COVID-19 is going to be on our mind. What are we going to do moving forward to make sure that we're still able to operate? You think right now, mm-hmm. schools, I think if they're smart, they're having a plan already in place for when everyone eventually returns, or, you know, some schools have already returned. But in the future, how are we going to make sure on a national level that we're still able to operate under certain circumstances? And so
what do you think needs to be changed in the education system for us to be able to operate on that level?
Oh, that is a good question. You bring up a big gun. Oh,
yeah.
Me specifically. Okay.
We're only 30 minutes into this bitch, and I've gotten through most of my goddamn questions. You talk too fucking fast. No, now I gotta bring out something that gets you to think.
Yeah. So let me take a second. Okay. What was the question one more time? What do I think?
Yeah, what are the major issues? This is actually my last question. But what are the major issues do you think that the education system needs to focus on in order to improve the education system as a whole?
Man, that is such a loaded question.
Yeah. I want the loaded answer too.
Yeah, I know you do. Okay. Let me think about this. So what does the education system need to do to improve? On a national level, and this is, so here's the thing. I always tell individuals, college isn't for everybody. Some students, some people, they're like, look, I tried to go to college. It didn't work out. And I hate that. The circles that I'm in, because I work in education, we're always pushing, oh, you need to go to school. You need to do this. You like, once you, more education opens up more access to more jobs, this, that, another.
But which is true.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's because that's the way our society is set up. But there are certain barriers to a college education that I think, like, at that needs to change. And so you look at a student who may be very capable, but if they're like, hey, I couldn't get a scholarship, or my public school, or just my school in general, like, didn't prepare me adequately enough for these tests to get into college, like, there are ways around it, obviously, but I think the barriers placed is always, one is the cost. And so how do you navigate the cost of attendance for any school, right? And because a lot of them will say, hey, our tuition is set this way because this is used to fund XYZ. If we make it free, or if we lower it, then we may have to increase something somewhere else. And so there's always this balancing act. But I'm always going to see it, the financial burden, because one, I'm still paying back some student loans. I think that financial burden is definitely one of the biggest turnouts for students or people who want to attend college. They're looking at, okay, how much is this going to cost me a semester, a quarter,
versus how useful my degree is.
And so I know we're going to, so now I'm going to go on my tangent. So, cause I get passionate about this. So when you look at the cost of school, a lot of students are like, okay, well, why not just go to like a trade school, right? And to me, I'm like, that could be a better option. I know individuals who work in trades right now who are doing pretty well. They're very successful, I think. And so you look at, okay, do I want to go to this four-year public university, or do I want to go to this vocational training school? No matter how you look at it, we're going to have doctors and lawyers and educators and teachers, but we still need individuals who can fix a car, who can be dental assistants, who can assist that way. We still need those individuals.
Yeah. Because,
yeah. I don't know crap about a car. If my car breaks right now, it's like, well, I'm taking it to the shop. Right. So I have
to the shop.
Yeah. I haven't really delved into, I don't know. Like, I don't have those skills that someone else would. And so when I look at education, everyone is looking at it as, oh, you need to go to college. But then if you don't go to college, it's like, well, why didn't you go? Oh, well, the tuition was too high. Well, then you can always go to, you know, the junior college. And so the community college system, again, it's open access. And here's what I like about it. So there's every student can be accepted into a community college, right? Mm-hmm. There's not like this crazy entrance exam. What there may be, you may have placement tests, right? So a student will have to, you know, math, English, make sure you can read and write at the college level. Make sure you can do like, you know, certain functions at the college level regarding math. And so what it is, placement test, students take that, they're able to jump right in. It is a lower cost, but even then, some students will always say the financial burden is still too much. And I get it, you know, life happens. And so to me, that level right there, how are you charging students? And this is where I'm really going on a tangent. Here's what really makes me mad, because I know some schools are charging students full tuition, like room and board, but they are 100% remote right now.
Yeah, okay. That, like, I don't understand when it comes to just like the pricing system and their reasoning behind it. How are you going to charge someone full room and board when they're not eating at your establishment? You're not spending extra money on electricity or water. Like, not only are you charging them full price, you're saving money. Like, that doesn't make sense to me. Well, I mean, it makes sense if you look at it from like an industry standpoint. Like, this is an industry, we have to make the most money, so charge these motherfuckers out the ass and not give them anything. But like, how was that received just when like stories like that started popping up? How was that received in like the collegiate world?
I mean, it pissed people off. And it pissed me off because, for one, I've said this a lot, and people can disagree with me all they want. College, no matter how you look at it, it's a business, right?
Mm-hmm.
Education is a business. They are providing a service. We are paying for, like, students are paying for that service. They're getting something in exchange for that. They're saying, hey, in exchange for 4 years, 2 years, a year of education, this could potentially better your life in the future. And so it's all budgetary. It's still a business. Like, they are selling you something. You're going there. You're going to try to make a profit from that. And schools are trying to make a profit. So when this
whole COVID... Do you think that that's the right mentality, I guess?
Oh, no. Like, because I always think at the core of our being, everyone wants to make money because that's what our society thrives on. Like, you need the money, right?
Of course. So
I personally, when you turn something into, like, I'm not saying making money is a bad thing. Like, you need to make money to live. The problem is when you treat education like that, I think you're doing a disservice to the students because everything is so transactional at that point. And to me, education should not be transactional. It should be transformative. You're a lifelong learner. You're supposed to be getting these skills that's going to better you in society. A lot of students or a lot of people are like, oh, you're going to college, so you want to become an engineer or you want to be smart, you want to do this. There's still so many other skills you learn while in college. So whether that's public speaking, whether that's being a contributing member to society, like, you're having these deep conversations, you're meeting people that are going to open your mind to something else.
Speaking of contributing members of society, how long have you been in education, out of curiosity, before I ask this question?
My entire life.
Your entire life? Okay. Literally. So what do you feel about political science and philosophy majors?
Oh, you're going to take me there. Okay.
Yeah, I'm taking you there because those were my two majors in university. So I want to know what you think.
Again, I'm always going to be...
This is a test.
Yeah, it is. I know. And let me just preface this by saying, I don't care that you majored in it. If it was a crap major, it was a crap major. But so for me, honestly, though, you said political science and psychology?
And philosophy.
Philosophy. Okay.
Metaphysical philosophy, to be very specific.
Oh, here we go. Okay. Honestly, I would tell, so, and you know, because I'm an academic advisor, I would never tell somebody, hey, the major you're going into is going to be a waste of time. Like, that's not what I'm here for.
I'm waiting for the butt. I'm waiting for the butt because I feel it.
No, I don't have a butt. You caught me. I was going to say that. Here's what I'll say. Here's what I'll say. I'll say society has set it up in a way that more emphasis is placed on STEM. And so go ahead.
Sorry, no. But like, after you finish your thought, can you explain what STEM is?
Oh, okay. So I'll talk about that in a second. So that's just ST. So science, technology, engineering, math, right? So I feel like a lot of our society, I guess I should have started with that. A lot of our society places emphasis on those types of skills, those types of majors. And so it's like, if you do anything else, it's considered less desirable or less than. And so you have someone like me who went into education and it's just like, okay, I wasn't a math major. I wasn't science. I don't work in technology. I'm not IT. However, I feel like I have skills that I can contribute because a lot of these individuals, and this is not knocking any science majors, if you only take, you know, specific science classes and you're not going out of your way to take these other elective classes to broaden your horizon, are you really learning? Are you really getting the full benefits of your college career?
Well, okay, so I guess that goes back to the conversation about what you're trying to get out of your college career. If you're trying to get a degree to move forward, then yeah. Me personally, I first went in as a biochem major. Shut up. I know. It was horrible. Because literally, it's three majors in one. And I'm like, okay, I can't do biology, chemistry, and math. This is bullshit.
So, I'm going to stop you right there, though. So, okay. Because I know you said you went into like philosophy, right? So here's the thing about that. So you went into it and you're like, you know what, this isn't for me. But then society would tell you, well, I mean, you could have just toughed it out. Like, that was a great major. You could have made a lot of money. At the end of the day, yes, you do want to make money. You have to make a living. But I'm always going to go back to the, you have to spend so much of your life at work. Like right now, I have a friend who was a math major, works in coding right now. Mm-hmm. He makes way more, like about $50,000, $60,000 more than I, like way more than I do. And he's just like, I hate my job. He loved his major, but he hated his job. And so I'm always telling you, I don't care what you major in college, your career after that is not always going to line up to, like, just because you're good at math doesn't mean you're going to, or computers, technology, doesn't mean you're going to like that specific field. And so you making a lot of money, you think you're going to be happy. He can afford anything he wants, pretty much. However, you're spending all that time at work at a job you don't like because you went to school for X number of years to do a job and to realize, I really don't like this. And so for you, you're like, hey, this didn't work out for me. I'm going to do something that I might be more interested in. And so I say go for it, like, as long as obviously you want to make a living. But you have to go into something that you're going to, at some level, enjoy, because work is work no matter how you look at it.
Yeah.
I don't want you to wake up every morning saying, oh, my God, I have to go to work. So then you're going to be miserable for 8 hours a day or 12 hours, depending on your job. You're just going to be miserable at work, go to sleep, just to do it all over again.
Yeah, okay. Like, that was, like, a very big deciding factor for me, I'm going to be perfectly honest, when it came to, like, changing my majors. Because, like, I changed my majors, like, 3 times in the first semester. Because I went in as biochem, and then I switched to biology and philosophy. And then over the summer term, because, like, I was taking, like, 23 credit hours a semester. Because, again, like, I am... Ultimately, like, I have passion for politics and philosophy, but I'm also an overachiever. So, like, I put myself through too fucking much, and, like, I really did force a burnout. But I was doing, like, 23 credit hours. Over the summer term, I switched to philosophy and political science, and my teacher's like, oh, good luck trying to graduate in 4 years. And I'm like, you know what, you some bitch, I'm gonna do it.
And
that didn't happen, just because, like, depression, but but and no, burnout, but I enjoyed philosophy.
But that's the thing. So going back to that, one, your teacher or professor, whoever, shouldn't have said that, like, good luck, and, like, regardless of the outcome. But for me, again, that's something you said you enjoy, right?
Yeah.
And as long as you enjoy it, that's what counts. Now, here's what you have to be careful, though, because going back to my story, my friend loved math, computers, technology, hates his job. I don't want you to enjoy, like, taking these, like, do you like having those political discussions? Is that what you liked about, you know, political science, like the politics of it? And then when you look at actual politics, it's probably nothing like you've ever experienced in a classroom.
It's, I went to a PWI. It's exactly like I experienced in a classroom. to a fucking T. There was, I swear to God, I swear on my life, I remember this class, I remember this fucking Republican to this fucking day, okay? Just a little story time. I was in an African-American studies class. Of course, yes, it was taught by a white man, but the white man literally studied African politics, African and African-American politics, his entire career. So he's white, but he had some sort of knowledge that was and he wasn't, oh, this is what I know, it's like, this is what the research says. That that's the type of white person he was as a teacher. But no, there was this one white guy, he's like, oh, well, I don't get why we have to focus on African-American history when we don't focus on Irish-American history. I looked at him, I'm like, you mean European history? Is that what you're talking about? European history? Is like, oh no, I'm talking about Irish American history. It's like, what's an Irish American? And he's like, oh, when they came over from, and then I looked him dead in the face. I cut him off. I'm like, from Europe. So European history. You want to talk about that? He's like, oh, but the Irish were slaves. And like, I'm a very shut an idiot down kind of person. That's one of the reasons why I want to get into politics, so I can, in fact, bust up that respectability politics mindset. But I effectively called him stupid consistently, because he was trying to spout out lies and say that Black people didn't deserve rights. Because when we were talking about police brutality, he's like, oh, well, why do he spout out that 1350 statistic? And this was like 2 years ago, dude. Before it was popular, he was spouting this shit. And I'm looking him dead in the face, and I'm like, okay, but like, exoneration rates are 7 times higher than any other group when it comes to Black people. Not to mention wrongful arrests are 2 to 3 times more likely to happen. He's like, oh, well, do you have any sources on that? It's like, yeah, I do. Here they are. Now, do you have any sources on what the fuck you were saying? It's like, oh, you can Google it. So it devolved into him trying to critique all of my, everything that I said. He tries like, oh, well, if you have some sources on that, I'd love to look at them and judge them for their authenticity. So what I, let me just to finish the story, what's moved my mindset to a very one and done kind of conversation is the idea that you have to prove everything that you say, and empathy can't be engaged, you know, unless it's for selfish purposes, obviously. I lost where I was going with that. I just remember that white guy, and I wanted to tell that story. That's about it.
Well, no, because, no, you bring up a good point, though, because, and here's why, this is why I say politics, so this is why it can be interesting, right? Because now I've talked to people who are like, you think this way because you had a liberal education and this, that, and other, and it's literally all I'm saying is, hey, again, the research shows, and here's what it shows, and you want to argue with me about what has been studied for years. I just don't understand why that doesn't make sense to some people, but here we are. And so that's why when you say you enjoy politics, more power to you, because I know you probably like to argue. I could not sit there and try to debate with individuals, basic human right. I don't know, because politics is in everything.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And it's crazy because you're like, well, you hate politics. And I always tell people, education, higher education, is the most political field outside of politics. We are slow to change. As you can see with this whole COVID thing, no one really knows what to do. Each school, each area is kind of doing their own thing. And so, yeah, institutions are slow to change. They are very political.
See, okay. I just, when it comes to, and just moving on to politics just a little bit more pointed,
Wait. Before we go there, because okay. You did ask a question that I didn't get the answer that I want to go back to.
Did you write it down?
Yeah,
did
yeah.
Did you take notes?
I did.
Fucking dweeb.
Yeah, I'm trying to. All right, so I know we were, a few conversations ago when I said, hey, like, your college experience, like, what you want to get out of it, like, you should be trying, like I said, you students should take these, you know, extracurricular classes, you know, these electives to kind of broaden their perspective on things. And you said it goes back to, you know, why are they in college? Are they going for that reason, or are they going just to get a job? Like, what's their particular reason? And so you did get me on that one because you are right. Some students, some individuals, I got you. Some students, no, because I've met some people who are like, I'm not here to take these electives. I don't care about humanities. I don't care about this whole political stuff. I'm here for science. This is what I want to take. I want to take my biology class, these two classes, and then I want to get out of here. They're not really trying to engage in a meaningful way. So you're right. I'll give you that. But my job as an educator is, well, I know you probably, if money is tight, you probably just want to take the classes you need to get out. But if you did have the time, the money, you know, funding or whatever, like, would you consider taking XYZ? And so it's just trying to broaden their horizon, their perspective to something other than, you know, just science, just math, just technology.
Gotcha.
Because at the end of the day, we do want you to be a well-rounded person. Like, that's the whole college experience. And I feel like that's what students are missing. And so this
that's
is why
the college dream. Let's alter that. That's the college dream. I don't think that's the college experience.
Right.
Depression, anxiety, and Adderall, I think, is more accurate to the college experience of today, just based off of like my experience in college.
No, but I've known a few people. Yeah. And so you're right. So that's the college dream. And here's why I say that institutions or colleges, universities, will always be around. So even in this whole COVID mess, because a lot of people are like, oh, these schools are going to close down, and some have, but my whole philosophy is, it's the college experience, though. No other time in life are you going to move away from home, live in a new city, possibly a new state, with a group of individuals, like, and I'm talking about traditionally aged students, traditional college, around your age in a residence hall. That's that whole experience. You're immersing yourself in that culture that you probably wouldn't otherwise get. So typically students who live on campus, the research shows, they tend to matriculate, they do better in their classes, they get more involved on campus, they feel an attachment to that place. And so that's pretty much where I was going with that, where it's like, I want more for you than to just, I'm here to take these math classes and get out of here, which you're always going to have students like that. Money is going to be tight for a lot of people. Some people aren't on financial aid. Some people are like, hey, I'm just here to take this class and get out of here. I don't care about engaging with anyone else. And you can't really do anything about that, specifically if their budget situation doesn't allow for it.
Exactly. Okay.
So you got me on that one. I'll give you that.
I got you. I know I got you, motherfucker. I pull them out every so often. Every so often. But anyway, so who is the new Secretary of Education? Like, what is his, that's like really the, what do you think about the new Secretary of Education?
Yeah, I'm going to have to Google all of this.
Never mind. We don't have, because I don't know enough on it either. I've heard his name mentioned once. And I'm like, maybe he might, like, you know, maybe Larry might know who the fuck that is. But, like, he's a teacher, apparently. And I heard a couple of things about him on MSNBC. So,
I mean,
too early to tell.
But also, could we get in? Let me not say that. I was going to say, could it get any worse than who we had? But, yeah, I'm not going to.
Don't jinx it.
I'm not. And I don't want to get into that whole conversation just yet, but there are certain. Okay, so I think we're gonna have to go there. So
let me ask the question first. Okay. What are your thoughts on Betsy DeVos?
Okay, and I'm just gonna speak from the COVID-19 because there are a lot of things, but.
No. Over the last 4 years. From start to finish, we got to review this woman's career.
It's just going to be hard for me to pull out some positives. So here's my thing. When I look at, and these are the things just off the top of my head, I felt personally the whole, I think there was something about the Title IX and sexual assault thing that she changed, or like, I think that's a law she made that's going to stick with colleges and universities, where it pretty much narrowed the definition of what sexual assault is, you know, on a college campus.
Yeah.
And it gave, so that to me, very negative, but let me try to turn this into a positive. She was saying.
Why?
You're right. I can't.
It's Betsy DeVos.
Like, objectively,
why try and turn it into positive?
Yeah, objectively speaking, you want to give more rights to the accuser, right? Or the accused and the accuser. And so it's just like they need their due process, they need their time in court, whatever they need to have that, they need to have their due process. I understand that. However, I also think the way that it was done will make people not come forward as often. Mm. So there was that whole case. There was the whole case of wanting to the whole COVID-19 thing where you pull funding from the public schools to try to give to the private schools. There was the whole you need to be open during. I think there was a threat of if you don't open during like in the fall during the whole COVID-19 thing.
Yeah, Trump was on a war tear that time.
Yeah, that we're gonna pull funding, and it's just like, lady, are you serious? Like, people's lives are at stake. Literally, people's lives are at stake, and you are saying they need to open. And she went on record saying that, and I'm paraphrasing here, that there isn't gonna be any like significant like health issues or any problems with students. Like, they wouldn't be safe if schools were to open in the fall, which obviously a lot of health experts were 100% against. And so there's just so much that it's going to be hard to unpack. Even an hour of discussion wouldn't be enough for
an hour of that. Discussion so would not be enough. Jesus.
My thoughts on that is she's out, and that's good enough. That's good enough. Like, she's out. That right there is the start.
I can't be mad at that because, and I remember it was sophomore year when Trump got elected, the amount of stupidity that like just people had to deal with.
I'm sorry, I just had to look up the Betsy DeVos, like the whole sexual assault thing. I wanted to make sure that I was actually given like the correct information. But yeah, essentially gave more rights to the person being accused. It just made it so that people. It's unlikely that people will step forward in this situation.
When it comes to Ms. DeVos, like you said, she's out. So
yeah,
that's all we really care about.
Yeah, a lot of people, that's what I'm saying. Like, she's done.
Right. Last question, and then we're going to be done. What do you think the government should take? What steps do you think the government should take when it comes to education reform? Do you think it should be federal? Do you think it should be state? Do you think, and I'm not talking COVID, I'm talking generally, generally speaking, what do you think the government needs to do?
Well, so when you say federal, like, so, because again, it's going to depend on what schools the students go to. So obviously private schools, like what, how are they going to, okay, this is a loaded question. Let me think.
Do you think it should be a federal response? How, let me specify it. Let me specify the question. Okay. So do you think that the federal government should do something about education reform? And what do you think they should do if you do?
Oh God, I think they there needs to be a response, because right now leaving it like of course every school has, like, you know, or the public state schools have these the state funding XYZ, like, hey, the federal government gives us this amount of money for us to do X amount of things. Mm-hmm. However, if left up to me, education is just, to me, should be a right. Not this whole privilege of how much money do I have and am I able to attend the school? And a lot of people are like, oh, well, you want there to be free education and XYZ and blah, 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 blah. How are these people going to make money? Honestly, I think eliminating that, I'm going to go back to that financial barrier. Having that lessened or eliminating it altogether, I think would be a positive thing, because I've known people who are very capable who just didn't have the means, who were just like, If I could have gotten X number of dollars, I could have gone to here, I could have excelled, I could have done this. And then, mm-hmm. of course, there are always going to be the naysayers or people who are like, well, you should have applied for more scholarships, you could have saved, you could have worked harder, you could have done X, Y, Z. Nothing is always as black and white as it seems. And so,
yeah, people have a real problem with, like, trying to abuse the idea of a meritocracy. And it's like, half of you motherfuckers do not, like, the motherfuckers who invented meritocracy owned slaves, so they weren't doing it on their own merits. What are you talking about? Like,
I look at my situation, and the only way I was able to go to school, like those private schools and stuff like that, was because the private charter school I went to gave me a scholarship to go to that high school. And the only reason I was able to go to that private charter school, because it was a private school at first before switched to charter, but the only reason I was able to go to that elementary private school was because my aunt worked there and she knew someone who knew someone who was able to get them. Like, that's just how I was lucky. I was lucky. Without that opportunity, I would not have been able to go to, you know, that high school. I would have been able to get that scholarship from that school, from the elementary school that paid for my high school. I wouldn't have gotten that private education that pushed college for me to go to college. You see, like, there's always a series of events that take place. And so I don't want, like, the government really didn't step in that situation. And so I feel like a lot of students in my situation who would not have been as lucky, what would they have done? Of course you can say go to public school and then go to college. That's always a route. Like, that's always a thing. However,
that doesn't still work for everyone, yeah.
Yeah, you're going to run into that issue of, okay, I went to this public school, I know about college, I know, like, the admission steps, or I have an idea of them, but it's always going to be financial aid. And then when you look at it, colleges are giving, like, the student loan debt crisis, oh my gosh. So colleges are, like, how are people paying this money back? That's what I'm saying.
Look, Biden said 10,000. That's all I'm saying, because... I mean, apparently 50,000 isn't, like, it's too big. I don't know. I just wanted to take a shot at Biden, I'm going to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be a lot of issues. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of issues with that. But here's my thing. It's always that financial burden. And I hate giving you, like, a problem without an answer. But to me, it's always going to be that one barrier of the first one, I think, is going to be the finances. That's the first thing we need to look at or take a crack at. Like, once that's situated, then we can see the rest unfold. But right now, we got to look at the access to colleges and universities.
So, again, okay. Thank you for being on. This was Shower Thoughts with an Asexual. I'll see you guys next time.